Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, I'm finally free. Finally, I'm finally me. Finally, I'm finally free.
Of the Black Girl Nerds podcast. My name is Jamie. I am your host. Tonight's episode is about Geek Girl Con 2013. It happened this weekend. We have special guests who were also attendees of the event, Rachel Brody and Jazz. So they are going to discuss all of the panels that took place. And if you guys have any questions or even comments about Geek Girl Con, if you attended it, feel free to tweet to us. Use the hashtag BGNPodcast. And you can also call in to ask questions. Our number is 347-237-4616. Our co-host tonight is Tara. And before I send over the virtual mic over to Tara, I just want to make a couple of announcements. As always, I like to announce about Zazzle.com. We have a store there. So if you go to www.zazzle.com/blurredgasm, then you can purchase merchandise in the Black Girl Nerds store. So we have mugs, T-shirts, keychains, a whole bunch of fun stuff with our logo on it. And you can feel free to express your nerdy girl self via Zazzle.com, blurredgasm. And all of the proceeds and the funds that is put into that site does go back to these podcasts. So certainly we do appreciate all of you guys that have already purchased items and encourage those who haven't to check the store out. Also, blackgirlnerds.com, it's the website. A lot of our content that we publish is done via the website. We have several contributors. Tara, our co-host, is also a contributor. We do giveaways every now and then, so I encourage you to bookmark blackgirlnerds.com on your browser and stay tuned in November. We've got two upcoming giveaways that are happening. So blackgirlnerds.com, again, is that site. So before we get started, I want to pass the virtual mic over to Tara. And Tara, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, your social media shout-outs, any current projects that you're currently working on.
Hi, everyone. This is Tara. It's been quite a while since I've been on the podcast, so I'm really glad to be back. You can find me at Twitter. My name is at Simply Sundra. That's T-S-U-N-D-R, Simply Sundra. I also finally have a blog that's up. It's Sundra Tsunami. And what projects am I working on? My job. Building my house up, well, not physically building my house, but getting my house together. I purchased one in May. And trying to get something with one of the anime groups panned out, which has been a wee bit of a hassle, but it's okay. I'm working at it.
Good stuff. All right. So tonight we have guest Rachel Brody, also known on Twitter as girl_onthego. And we have Jazz, also known on Twitter as @NappyNerdGirl. Please give these ladies a warm welcome, everybody. Thank you, ladies, for being on the show tonight. Very excited to have you on. Before we get started to questions, I want to start with Rachel first and then Jazz. If you can just introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you love most about being a part of the geek community.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm a writer and a playwright, and I do a lot of social media, online blogging. My background is in media studies and playwriting, and right now I have a day job as a fashion copywriter at Macy's. What I really love about the geek community, and especially a convention like this, is it's so easy to meet people and talk to people, and while I can kind of be assertive online, I'm pretty shy in real life, so it's a nice welcoming atmosphere to kind of get to meet new people and talk to folks and be myself and come out of my shell a bit.
Hi, this is Jazz. A little bit about myself. I'm an engineer in the daytime, and then I like to write gaming reviews in my spare time and do lots of other crafting types of things. And for me personally, I love being a geek because it's so interesting to be able to talk to somebody that really gets what you're into, like that is just as enthusiastic about whatever it is that you're a geek about. I love that because oftentimes I find myself in sort of like the engineering setting with a lot of guys that are looking at me going, why are you interested in that? That is so weird. And here especially, it's fun because there's so many people like you that like similar things.
Awesome. Well, I want to get started by asking you guys some questions, and we do have some callers that have already called into our queue, so this is going to be a really interesting discussion tonight. Starting with Rachel, why don't you tell us, for those of us that may not know, what is Geek Girl Con?
Geek Girl Con, it builds itself as a celebration of the female geek, and the programming has been great. It includes a lot of kind of fandom things, guests from the entertainment industry, advice on, you know, doing your costumes and cosplay, but there's also a more serious side with topics like STEM careers, game design, coding. I went to something about doing audiobooks with your indie published writing earlier today. And it's also got, there's like a room of companies that are recruiting and specifically want to bring more women into their technology businesses. So it's really kind of got the best of everything, I think.
And Jazz, tell us, what is it about Geek Girl Con that speaks to you, and why do you attend?
I think that this is one of the best conventions that anybody can go to, especially as a woman. The environment here is so welcoming and inviting that it's such a rare feeling at a convention where it's just like no one is putting anyone down and you're accepted for whoever or whatever you like, you're into. There's nobody like rolling their eyes or just being kind of nasty that you see in other larger conventions. So that has always drawn me here, not only just the sort of the geeky, stereotypical geekiness of comics and games and books and fandomism, but I think that it's really also unique that they incorporate education into the convention. They incorporate STEM into the convention and open conversations about what it means to be sort of like a woman in a vast number of fields.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome. And Rachel, what is it about Geek Girl Con in particular for you? What is it that appeals to you?
I think kind of everything that Jazz just mentioned, and also just the safety of the event. One of the things I've read a lot about over the last few years is kind of women encountering a lot of sexism at different conventions. And, you know, you read about some of the stuff that's happened at PAX with Penny Arcade and things that happen to women who cosplay at different conventions. And those aren't really spaces I want to be a part of or put myself in. Whereas here, it's a really safe space and you can be yourself and let your geek flag fly and not worry about people cutting you down or not being interested in what you have to say. Everybody, I mean, from the panelists to the people asking questions, everybody's so interested and so engaged. It's just a fantastic atmosphere. There's opportunities to talk to artists. I talked a little when we were talking before the podcast about, you know, their work. As an indie and self-published author, it was great to be able to see examples of people's art and, you know, maybe contact them later about book covers and other kind of pieces. The shopping's fantastic. There's some really cute, geeky things to buy. They did Bechdel Test Burlesque the first night, which I didn't get to go to, but everything I've heard about it was amazing. That's kind of it.
And we actually have a panelist that spoke at Geek Girl Con. The panel was called Romance is a Feminist Genre, and her name is Barb. So I'm going to bring her on the line now so she can discuss with us about that panel. Barb, are you on the line with us?
I am here.
Hi, Barb. Hello. How's it going?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm like across town. I was there this morning, and now because I'm a local, so.
Well, Barb, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us who you are and what brought you over to Geek Girl Con, and discuss a little bit about the panel that you helped moderate.
Okay. My name is Barbara Ferrer. I'm on Twitter as Barb Ferrer, and I'm a published young adult author, multicultural YA, as Caridad Ferrer, which is a long story everybody got to hear about earlier. It's actually my middle name. My mother was so happy I finally got to pull it out of mothballs. I was at Geek Girl Con as part of the Romance is a Feminist Genre panel. And I'm at Geek Girl Con, too, because I've got a 16-year-old daughter who's very much a proud geek, and she draws manga and anime, and that's her... That's her world, and I love that I'm able to bring her somewhere that's a safe space, as Rachel was saying, that and Jazz was saying, that, you know, you don't get the grief that you get at a lot of other cons. You know, she can just do her thing and feel comfortable and feel safe. And so it was kind of a dual-pronged thing for me, and I really enjoyed it. As far as the panel went, wow, I was really thrilled because we were the first panel on a Sunday morning and we had over 40 people there. I think Rachel said she was number 42,
yeah.
which my geeky daughter immediately glommed onto and laughed about. It was talking, we really kind of hit the spectrum because we had panelists who went from the world of fan fiction to more traditionally published romance authors, and then there was me from the YA world, and I did get my start writing fan fiction as well. And we kind of all talked about how romance is a very empowering feminist genre because it is a genre that is primarily written by and for women. And there's so many misconceptions about it, and we were just doing our little part to help clear that up a little bit.
And Rachel, you also attended Romance as a Feminist Genre. What was it about this panel that spoke to you, and is romance a feminist genre?
Well, one of the reasons I decided to go is I'm just embarking on a massive writing project with a friend of mine where we're going to kind of do cross-genre a couple of different ways. So I wanted to hear, like, what's the conception of romance and feminism. And I, especially after listening to the panelists today, I don't think anybody could argue that today it wouldn't be considered a feminist genre. As Barb says, it's written for women, by women. One of the women on the panel was saying that it's making $1.2 billion a year with 75 million readers.
Wow.
And it's all about women. It's about how women become able to be part of safe relationships and good relationships. It's about enjoying what you're reading and having a positive kind of impact. And it was just really exciting to hear about kind of all these different women and their journeys into romance, the people that they'd read, the way that their books had been received, and changes in the romance genre itself over the last maybe 30 or 40 years.
Wow. And Jazz, you attended Octobriana, the Black Heroine and Wonder Woman, A Comic History. Tell us about that event.
That was a very interesting panel because it was mostly academic in terms of one woman looked at Wonder Woman, but in the 40s, she was really passionate about the early forms of Wonder Woman. And it was just interesting to see how Wonder Woman's, it feels like vastly different now than what she was in the 40s in terms of how they got away with slipping in sexuality and really like pushing the envelope of women's sexuality and between their relationships between men and women. And then I got to see a really good friend of mine, Grace Gibson, speak about her master's thesis, in which she took a group of black undergraduate students and asked them to create their own superhero. And she only stipulated that the superhero had to be a woman and she had to be black. And she went and talked about what she found through these 35 people of varying ages and how they felt a woman should be represented in comics in particular. And she just went through things that she found that were fascinating and things that she wasn't sure if she should be disturbed about or things she didn't even think about. Like one thing in particular were a lot of the women when describing their character wanted to talk about make sure that their superhero had like a certain butt shape or size, which she thought was she never even thought about that, but it was it was interesting because of how other people looked at people that aren't necessarily familiar with comics, how they would want a black female to be portrayed in mainstream comics.
Wow. And Grace Gibson is a contributor to Black Girl Nerd, so I'm very proud of the fact that she was at that event and was moderating that. Also, is there any kind of video or any sound bites from that panel that we can listen to or watch?
You know what? Someone was videotaping it, so I'll get in contact with the con and see if we can get a copy or where we could find a copy of it. I do know that they do video pretty much every panel that I've been to They've been videotaping the discussion. So I will get back to you guys with that.
Awesome. Good stuff. And we have Danielle that's calling in. She's also a part of Geek Girl Con, so I'm going to bring her on the line. Danielle, you're on the air with Black Girl Nerds.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm awesome.
Awesome. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to Geek Girl Con and what panels did you attend?
Okay, so I am a biologist. I study bomb-sniffing rats. So I study animal behavior.
That's so cool.
And I came to Geek Girl Con for two reasons. One, I was one of the participants in the first ever Do-It-Yourself Science Zone, where we had over 10 hands-on activities for kids and adults to participate in during the entire weekend. And I also participated in a panel, The Evolving Role of Characters of Color in Science Fiction and Horror Movies and Television.
Tell us a little bit about that panel. What kind of takeaways did you have from attending that event?
Okay, so we examine the evolution of the character, so looking at the traditional tropes. So in classic movies particularly, you know, the idea that the black person or the brown person is always the first to die, so from being completely invisible and disposable through the late 70s and 80s, you know, we started making jokes about it. So it became that of satire. They were like, oh, the black guy's going to die, or the black brown person's going to die, to they had a little bit more airtime, but then these obvious tropes evolve, such as the sassy sidekick or the sage, you know, also known as the magical Negro / Asian / brown person, as well as the savior, so sometimes the sacrificial, you know, person who saves the life, but if the white protagonist, whether male or female, survives or the storyline proceeds. And so we really kind of examine those traditional, you know, tropes and then how we've challenged that in more present day. And we really believe that TV, particularly cable TV, you know, is at least giving us something closer to more developed characters. And what we want to see ultimately is, you know, fully formed characters, not just caricatures, not just tropes. We want characters of color that are, you know, fully human. They're flawed and beautiful and relatable, and, you know, we also get angry at them. You know, we want fully formed characters that aren't just one dimension. We don't want to just trade one dimension for another dimension. And we think there are some shows out there that are doing pretty good. They're not great. I think Sleepy Hollow is a really good example of one that's doing it. The Tale of the Native Americans. That part. But, you know, and The Walking Dead does pretty good, except for that there can be only one rule. So we talk about all those things. But we're really looking forward to encouraging writers to write really good screenplays and really good, you know, weekly serials where characters of color are fully fleshed out and they're not always making a point that, oh, this character happens to be a person of color. So we're looking forward to that.
Wow, that's really good stuff. I had also sent out a link on Twitter about race and costuming performance, which was actually a panel that Rachel attended. So, Rachel, I wanted you to speak to that panel and what was discussed.
That was such a fascinating panel for me. I mean, I'm a middle-class white girl from the suburbs, and one of the biggest issues I've seen raised over and over and over again the last few years has been levels of safety for women at conventions in terms of sexism that they encounter and racism they encounter. And in particular, the question of cosplay comes up over and over and over again. And I know Shaka Cumberbatch, who I think has been on the show before, was one of the panelists for this. And also there was a burlesque performer called the Shanghai Pearl. And the two of them had such incredible perspectives to share about how people feel entitled to visually consume someone who is maybe presenting a burlesque act or presenting cosplay. And it really, they really dug into some things. One of the things that the Shanghai Pearl brought up was Dita Von Teese, who's one of the most famous burlesque performers there is. And she was talking about how she has this act called the Opium Den, and how uncomfortable it was and for her to watch that act, and how exploitative that act felt to her. And I had actually seen that last year in New York, and I was really uncomfortable watching it because she kind of cherry-picks these pan-Asian qualities or pan-Asian markers and then jumbles them all together and does this really this pointless and insulting performance. So hearing somebody who had a burlesque background, who had more of a background with Asian culture, commenting that she had felt the same way or even more intensely uncomfortable that I had felt, and then kind of having Chaka chime in with some stuff about how there are assumptions that everybody watching is white or everybody watching doesn't see that symbols of oppression are being co-opted and brought in to make money was really an interesting thing to hear about from that perspective. It was really fascinating. And one of the things that was great about this panel, it was another early morning panel. I think it was 10 or 11 in the morning. It was a huge audience. I think there were probably 50 or 60 people there. And once they went through talking about kind of what the features of cosplay and burlesque were and what a costume is and how skin color isn't a costume and culture isn't a costume, it was just so enlightening. I felt really privileged to be in the audience and be able to hear that directly from people who had such extensive experience in that area.
I'm curious if that's the one where they spoke about how uncomfortable it can be at, whether it be cosplaying burlesque. Did they mention, like, creeper cards in that panel at all?
They talked a little bit about that. I guess that kind of played into how people consume things that they see, and people feel entitled if you're wearing a costume to come up and comment about, you know, this part of your costume is accurate, and the fact that you're not the same race as the character you're cosplaying makes your costume inaccurate, which, like, why would people feel entitled to go up to someone and say that kind of thing?
Right.
And one of the questions that came up when they started doing Q&A was that someone had been at a convention where a parent had dressed their daughter as Michonne from The Walking Dead and put her in blackface.
I remember that.
And how people were reacting to that, and why didn't those parents understand that that wasn't okay?
That's very interesting.
And it really, for me, it really brought up how closely related that entitlement is to the same kind of attitude that makes a room full of guys at PAX think it's okay to laugh about rape jokes.
Because I know at one of the major conferences that I attend, they have something called creeper cards, which are basically whoever it may be, they have them, and if a person steps out of boundaries, they hand them the creeper card and, like, hey, you need to calm down, you did something inappropriate. And this is even something in the anime group that I'm in right now. We had to school a guy on saying, like, he just came up and was like, I got in trouble because I came up and hugged a girl and she freaked out, and it's like, yes,
mm-hmm.
not good, you can't just do that.
Yeah, don't touch her. Yeah.
Well, we've got a couple of callers on the line, so I want to bring in our next caller. You're on the air with Black Girl Nerds. What's your name and where are you from?
Hey, ladies, this is Stan. I'm just sitting here fist-fucking my asshole, and my hand is stuck. What should I do?
Take it out.
Okay. Alrighty then. Well?
I hear that there are, you know, ointments for that, but...
God, I love it, man, when people just say the most random things. Okay, dude. Yeah. All right. Thanks, dude, for calling in.
Yeah. Here I'm thinking, I hope this is somebody knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid
there's
somebody else in the queue. I'm afraid to pick it up, but I'll bring them up.
Go ahead and put them on.
You're on the air with Black Girl Nerds. What's your name and where are you from?
Hey, you black nerdy bitches. How was that convention? You sticking in?
Wow.
It's pretty intense tonight.
Inappropriate.
Wow. All righty. So apparently a lot of trolls have been brought in on this podcast, but we're going to keep it moving.
We're doing something right.
That means you're famous when you get haters.
Yeah. They're just showing the love the only way they know how, the poor misguided individuals.
Well, let's move on. So both of you, Jazz and Rachel, and Barb, I know you're still on the call, so definitely chime in here as well. You attended the Best of Both Worlds, Careers in STEM Meets the Humanities, and I wanted to know from each of you, what did you learn from that panel? And basically with STEM, there's been a little bit of controversy with STEM because people think STEM should only apply to science, technology, engineering, and math, but a lot of folks also want to integrate the arts and the humanities in that, and now the new acronym STEAM has also been a new buzzword. So I wanted to get your take on that panel and what you guys thought about it.
I thought it was fantastic. I actually, when you sent the list of questions, I didn't realize that STEAM was an acronym, and I guess that's throwing the arts into science, technology, engineering, and math. And I think this panel covered that so well, because generally I think that arts and humanities do get kind of dismissed when you're talking about engineering and science and technology and math, and the point of this panel was that it really shouldn't be. The women who were speaking on the panel were talking about how, to them, someone who can start out with an ability to understand the hard science and then translate it into kind of something that people who don't have that background can understand is something that is really valuable and is something that they're actively seeking. And I think that artists have a lot to contribute to the conversation. I mean, last year I put out a book called Hot Mess, Speculative Fiction About Climate Change, and nobody who wrote for that book has a background in science. But we're all huge nerds. We all care about climate change. We care about the planet. And, you know, we wanted to be able to help spread the message that, you know, things are changing and science and technology have a role in the arts and vice versa. So I think it's pretty obvious that the humanities do have something to contribute in this area, and it's really exciting that seemed to be very acknowledged by professionals in the STEAM careers as well.
And for me, unfortunately, Aqua Brianna overlapped with that particular panel, so I didn't even get to make it there because we had such a great discussion with the audience members going on in Aqua Brianna that we kind of went over our time limit, so I wouldn't even been able to make it to the panel. But I'm sad, even though I do know that I've been having this argument as an engineer for a very long time because I do a lot of design, especially in theater, and it was always hard to try to get my engineering friends to understand that, like, art and science should go hand in hand, and they do, in my personal opinion.
Oh, they absolutely do. I mean, I'm going to fall back on my daughter again here, but she is, as I said, a manga and anime artist. She works primarily in digital, which means she's very computer savvy. She's got a natural affinity for math, which kind of scares me because I'm your typical way over on the artsy end of the scale going, math, you know, and throwing holy water at it. But, you know, I think that...
Uh-oh. Barb, did we lose you? Yeah,
I think
she's still on the call. I just can't hear. She's muted or something. Okay.
Maybe she'll come back.
I
got to meet her. I got to meet her daughter for a few minutes earlier today, and I think, you know, without wanting to speak for her, she was really just such an intelligent young woman. And talking about, you know, and I saw some of the art she does, and the fact that she's kind of so immersed in it, and that there's this whole technology side to it, is just amazing to me.
Wow. Was there a large outcome of younger geeks out there, kids, Did they have any?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. This is a huge, like, convention for families, especially because it is such a safe space. You see just all types of families, any type of dynamic, some that are dressed up, some that just want to be involved and feel comfortable bringing their kids, any, like, babies. I mean, there are babies here, and it was just amazing because just to see, like, that nurturing of the future geek, I was like, yay! So it's definitely family-oriented.
Yeah. This morning I got here, and I was just waiting down in the lobby, and there was actually a whole circle of families that had come together, and they were kind of, some of the kids had costumes on, and they were kind of saying, okay, well, we're at the convention. Here's how you have to... If you're going to see people in costumes. Don't touch their costumes unless they say it's okay. We're going to do some gaming, talk about our favorite games. And it was just, it's so great to see that level of younger kids really being encouraged in their geekiness. But also, I was just astonished at, like, the accomplishments of some of the panelists who are, like, 10 years younger than I am. It was just amazing. And that they could come in and kind of relate their experiences and... Even, it, like, for example, there was a panel called Black Latina Girl Geek, and hearing about how different the experiences of the younger women on that panel were to, for example, my experiences growing up in terms of whether they were bullied or whether they were encouraged or discouraged, it was just really inspiring.
That's awesome. And I just want to give a shout-out to Danielle and Barb that called in. They're no longer on the call, but thank you, ladies, for calling in and giving us your insight about your experiences at the panel. Certainly appreciate your time there. What I also
and,
to find out... Oh, go ahead.
Really quickly, Danielle was just apologized. We're in the same room, so she apologized and left, but she's been doing hands-on DIY science experiments with kids all day long today, so she's a little exhausted, so that's why she had to step out.
Well,
but
we
she apologized and
it.
Said thank you.
Oh, no, thank you, Danielle, and I'll reach out to you again so we could have you on a future show about science. Jazz, I wanted to ask you, you attended the Female Characters in Game Design, and I know that that's a special passion of yours, so tell us more about that event.
I did, and it was a really interesting panel for me personally because they were talking about how do we go about creating real, like, women as real people and not just this stereotype or caricature that you see a lot of times in video games. And a lot of it was focused on basically not trying to answer the question, but how to get people to think more about what they're doing and to take the challenge of trying to create a woman as a person instead of, well, we need to have a woman because we think it'd be better if our game had a woman instead of, okay, this is this character, this is her background, this is why she's doing this. And there were a lot of people from varying backgrounds as far as Anita Sarkeesian was there, and you have, like, indie developers that were there, and they were all talking about how to get people to see that, you know, we're women, but we're not aliens. So it's not
right. That
hard to sort of create a realistic woman, whereas it seems to be really easy for them to create the white superhero type, like, first-person shooter characters. And a lot of, I feel like a lot of the attention was turned towards indie games because a lot of indie developers are really trying to push the envelope with creating real characters of color and real women within their games. So it was really, really interesting to see the varying opinions of what it means to be sort of like half feminism within the gaming community, because I don't know if a lot of people know, but within the actual community of developing games, it's about a 90% to 10% ratio of men to women. So you can see that disparity right away and sort of understand why we have games that the way that they are currently.
Did they come up with any sort of solutions or offered any resources to help encourage more diversity in gaming, to encourage more women to, you know, get involved in gaming software development programs?
Absolutely. The overlying theme was to get more women into gaming and to get more women not just at lower levels of gaming, but to have them stick it out so that they can be the ones making decisions about what types of games, wherever you're at, if it's a big AAA studio or at a small indie game gaming development company, that we need to be visible. We need to be there. We need to actually become a part of that community. And the real solution was to just, we need to be there. And
right.
With 90-10% ratio, it's more difficult, even though it's more of a hopeful environment, because this generation of gamers, game developers want to see realistic women, realistic people of color. So we just need to have people stick it out and rise through the ranks.
And Rachel, we tweeted out a link that you uploaded on SoundCloud, and I know you touched on this before, but I wanted to find out some more information because this is definitely a panel I would have attended had I been there. But you attended the Black Latina Girl Geek panel. So tell us more about your experience with that event and what did you learn from it?
Well, I guess the biggest thing was, especially after coming from the costuming and performance and recent costuming and performance panel that morning, it was so different from what I expected to hear. Two of the panelists were originally from outside the U.S. The moderator was originally from Panama, and one of the panelists was grew up in Puerto Rico until she was 23. And what I really loved about it was just the positivity of the content of that panel. It was all about encouraging girls who are geeky to embrace themselves. One of the panelists, I hope I don't mispronounce this, Aquela Lloyd, a hardcore gamer, she was like, you know what, do you. Don't change who you are. Just be yourself. And they were really talking about how they had grown up. For example, she said her mom bought her a 60-inch TV when she was 12, and all the boys would come over and she'd kick all their butts at games. And then, you know, one of the other women there was talking about reading science fiction and fantasy and how she was able to read English before she could speak English. So when she finally moved to the U.S., if she couldn't figure out what to say, she'd be like, wait, I'll write it down for you, and kind of communicate that way. And it was really, I think I mentioned this earlier, like it was so gratifying to hear that they had not encountered the kind of bullying that kind of maybe 10 years ago would have been, or not 10 years ago, you know, 10 years previous to their coming up through the kind of geek lifestyle, maybe would have been a little more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say that they had 100% positive experiences. Aquela particularly was talking about not really fitting in with the girls at her school because she was into gaming and kind of geekier things. But it was so great to hear about these people who were able to be themselves and have them shouting out to the next generation of people, you know, you be yourself too.
Were there any male attendees at Geek Girl Con?
Oh
yeah.
There's lots of guys.
There's a guy who's been going around. I can actually see him across the con floor right now with a life-size Dalek. And apparently somebody can ride in that Dalek as well as it being a remote-controlled Dalek. and he's not only is he, like, escorting this Dalek around, but he's been doing it dressed up in a skirt and fairy wings all day. So it's, like, there's all kinds of gender-bendy cosplay, costuming, you know, lots of guys behaving like human beings and not like the callers we had a few minutes ago. it's been a really good experience.
And to piggyback off of that, I went to the original, the inaugural Geek Girl Con, and I think we all were super shocked because the breakdown for that con was like about 60-40, 60% women and 40% men. And it wasn't just men that were there with their girlfriends or there with their moms or whatever. There were guys that were like, this is really important. Like, we love women. We think that it's great that they love to celebrate their geekiness, but we think that we just want to support women and what they love because, you know, they're not all buttholes. So, you know, they're like, I don't know how to put, I would use some other language, but I've been to a lot of conventions.
I think we've reached our foul language threshold this evening.
Exactly. And I just say, like, I've cosplayed at conventions, and it's just nice to see men, boys here that really just want to be a part of geek girl culture.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what I found was interesting in a lot of panels, they were asking questions like, I'm a writer, how do I write a better female character? Or I'm a game developer, how do I do this? They were genuinely interested in how do we get women more involved in what they're doing, or how do they do it better than what they're currently doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's good to hear.
Yeah. One of the things that I've found really fantastic is I feel like what's going on here is like feminism in a really healthy way. Like, it's not about excluding anybody. It's not about excluding men. It's about making sure everybody's included and everybody's equal, end of. And even aside from that, even though the panels I went to had kind of a heteronormative slant to their content, there were other panels that were about queer geekdom. There were people asking all kinds of questions. Like I said earlier, there was a lot of gender-bendy cosplay going on. Just the inclusivity of it has been fantastic.
With respect to diversity, and I'm just amazed at the amount of diversity panels that was at this event,
mm-hmm.
How was the turnout for just racially with people that decided to go to Geek Girl Con this year?
For me personally, because I go to a lot of conventions, I just came back from Son of Monsterpalooza, where I could count the number of minorities on one hand. This, and like, if you put it into perspective, this convention has a vast number of minorities in comparison to other conventions that I've been to. And not just minorities, but people that have various disabilities. I mean, one of the women on the panel, one of my panels for gaming, was blind, and she helps developers create games for people that have different and varying disabilities. And she actually tells them, hey, you need to do this because, like, if someone's blind, they need to have these cues in order to play your game. And so I think that not just racially this convention was diverse, but also with just varying people of just who they are. Like, I can't even put it in any educated term, because there's just so many, like, different people here that it's amazing to see at a convention and not have, you know, people clashing, everyone mm-hmm. just being welcoming and accepting.
Yeah. And I think that creates a really fantastic atmosphere for when people have sincere questions, and maybe they don't have the opportunity to ask questions about maybe more controversial subjects most of the time or at another convention, but because of the diversity and because there are so many different inclusive spaces opened up for discussion, you actually get to have a much deeper conversation about a lot of different issues, which I thought was fantastic.
Which panels in particular had the highest turnout?
I think that one of the, I forget her name, she used to be on Star Trek The Next Generation. I know that there was...
Denise Cosby.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Lots of people were there to see her. I mean, that was popular because she's, you know, a well-known geeky
right.
figure.
Star Trek. Were there a lot of celebrities? Were there any celebrities that attended, or...?
Jane Espenson, who was a writer on Buffy, and I think an executive producer or producer on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and now she does Both Husbands, which is an internet show, and also Once Upon a Time she's involved in.
Mm.
She was here, and I feel so bad I don't remember the woman's name, but the woman who was Red Fraggle on Fraggle Rock was here.
Are you serious?
Oh, Karen Prell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, okay, so here's a little history on these two. They have been supporting this con since its inception. I mean, Karen Prell actually did a sing-along with Labyrinth with us the first year. So these women are amazing. They want to see more women doing what they're doing.
That is so awesome. I just want to go because of that. Like, does she attend it every year or...
They totally have been. And they're really approachable, which is really nice because it's not like other conventions. They'll take their celebrities and shelter them. And, you know, you can't even like shake their hand and say, I really love your work. Like here, you can ask them questions if they have time. And it's just, it's a different experience than any other convention that you may or may not have gone to.
And in terms of panels, I know yesterday a friend of mine was trying to get into a panel on strong female characters in YA fiction, and she couldn't get in. And then yesterday I was in line for a panel on costuming tips, and they kept saying, and I wasn't going to be able to stay for the whole panel because it conflicted with something else, and they started saying, like, oh, we're not going to be able to let everybody in. So I was like, all right, I'm getting out of this line. Somebody who can stay the whole time can be, you know, can go in this one. So I think like a lot of the panels have been really popular.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the gaming panels that I have been to have been packed. I know that female characters in game design, they had to turn people away because it was just at maximum capacity. I think that also what was really well attended was the one panel that Danielle was talking about changing the role of the character of color. That was really well attended also, and they were actually shocked because they thought they were going to be talking to, you know, three people because it was at 10 a.m. So I think that people were just genuinely excited to be here and to actually hear what people have to say, especially with popular things like gaming and how to turn, I do know that how to turn your, make it like a business out of your whatever you're trying to sell on the internet, that was also very popular.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a good one, too. So for the Geek on a Budget, Geek Girl Con, what's the best way to prepare financially to attend this con? Because it's all, you know, some of us that are on the East Coast, it's on the West Coast. So what kind of suggestions do you have for the Geek on the Budget?
I will first say start with your plane ticket. Because that, like, if you get your plane ticket early enough and they already have dates and they're selling tickets here at the con for next year's convention, get that and try to start scoping out your plane ticket because that's probably going to be your biggest hit, especially if you're on the East Coast.
For me, one of the things I was looking at was the cost of the ticket, which is so reasonable compared to other conventions. I think the full price ticket is like $35 for the entire weekend.
Nice.
But I like to kind of, you know, see what I can do. So I approached the press people and I said, you know, I have a blog. I can probably share some information with some people. Is there any chance I could get a press pass? And while they don't have free press passes, there's a reduced rate for if you're going to be here as a press person. So that was one of my kind of money saving things. I think we had talked a little bit before the podcast about just like food and kind of a hotel being two of the other major expenses. I think the food here, I'm from New York City, I think the food here is really reasonable, and it's delicious, and there were a lot of different options within kind of a couple blocks of where the convention's held.
In terms of, because, you know, it's always, for me, plane ticket, and then where am I going to stay? If you know people in Seattle, great. If you don't, Airbnb is probably the best resource, or something like hotels.com. Get a cheap hotel. It doesn't have to be right next to the convention center because they have actual public transportation here that functions well. I also think that another good way is to just know that if this is something that you want to come to, start saving now because the next Geek Girl Con is going to be October 11th through the 12th, 2014. Same place. So start saving your pennies now, because that's kind of what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And we're coming to a close. We're about 5 minutes till the end of the show. Are there any opportunities or suggestions that you have for Geek Girl Con 2014? I mean, it sounds like they really have everything together with respect to diversity and just appealing to nerds everywhere. But was there any other things that you thought that this con should have had this year that they missed out on?
They should have Black Girl Nerds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there should be a panel that has Black Girl Nerds. I know that the person that sets up programming is really interested in having something like that. So I think that it's a great opportunity for all of us that love Black Girl Nerds to come out and support it and either be on the panel.
Woohoo! Black Girl Nerds repping Geek Girl Con next year. I really do. I actually had every intention of going next year, so that would totally be awesome. Any other things that we missed? Is there any other panels that you guys attended that we didn't talk about yet? I know there was so much going on in this convention.
I think that we didn't touch upon, there's an entire floor where you can learn how to play any type of board game or tabletop game, and it's a great opportunity for anybody that's been like, I really want to sort of learn Magic the Gathering, and I've always been really intimidated by other groups. And they're just people that are just really enthusiastic about, like, any game that you want to play. Like, I finally played Munchkin, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, it's one of those things where they have, like, a library of games, and you can just pick it, and somebody's willing to, like, play with you and teach you, like, strategy and tips and things like that. And I thought that was really, really fun.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who was running a table for gaming down on that level, and I had kind of, you know, perched at the edge of her table to just reorganize my bag, and this woman walked up and she said, I always want to learn how to play these games, but nobody will teach me, and you know, everybody's impatient with me. And they wound up having a two-hour discussion and running a trial game, a demo game for this girl so that she could learn how to play, which I think is really exciting and fantastic.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rachel and Jazz, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you to Danielle and to Barb for giving us your 2 cents about Geek Girl Con. Geek Girl Con, if you guys haven't checked it out, go to their website. It's www.geekgirlcon.com. Next year, as Jazz mentioned, it's in October. And it's in Seattle, Washington. So if you do have the opportunity to go out on the West Coast and check it out, you should. And, hopefully you'll see Black Girl Nerds there next year. I'm going to go anyway, regardless. So thank you, ladies, for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks.
And next week we have Ashley from quirksandsplatters.com. We're going to have a two-part horror podcast. So she's going to be on with us to talk about scary movies. It's going to be Halloween. So, of course, we're going to do a horror movie podcast. And then the following weekend, we're going to have a special guest, Tana Renee Du, who is a Black female horror filmmaker. She is going to be a guest on our show the following week. So definitely stay tuned next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you, ladies, so much.
Every day is a holiday. finally.